across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Back now at 7:06 on this Wednesday morning, 7th day of February. Nice to have you along. Coming up later this hour, we have two guests, John Shelton and Harvey Kay, going to talk to us about the importance of teaching labor history in our schools, about the labor movement, and the benefits for workers learning about yesterday to the benefit of the workplaces of today and tomorrow. So that'll be coming up in just a bit. We'll tell you what's in the daily newsletter from Up North News. We'll visit with Todd Alba. But first, of course, we've got this warm spell continuing with 38 degrees right now in Lake Wissota. Hayward's up to 37 already. Park Falls, 36. Wausau, 32. Green Bay, 33. Folks listening in La Crosse are at 36. Hometown Homegrown Radio in Wisconsin Rapids listeners are at 32. Oshkosh Air Support listeners, you have 30 degrees right now. Madison, 30. Waukesha, 28 degrees. And Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot joins us now to tell us more about this warm weather and the likely onset of rain. Not snow, rain this first week of February, Brittany.
I know. It's crazy stuff. We broke records across the state yesterday. Eau Claire coming in at 56 degrees. Wausau breaking records at 50. Wisconsin Rapids at 51, and now we're going to see even more records potentially broken here today. I'm talking Wausau, Eau Claire, La Crosse, Wisconsin Rapids again, even Hayward too, as we're going to rise back into those upper 40s to even mid-50s into some places. The further west you live, the warmer you're going to get today, but also the windier too. Those winds are going to start to whip out of the southeast this afternoon up to 25 miles per hour. So it's going to be a breezy day. It's also going to be a cloudy one. Any spots of sunshine will be early this morning and mainly into the northern half of the state. Down to the south and off into the east, you guys are in a dense fog advisory until 10 o'clock this morning. That's when those winds are going to pick up and really push that fog on out of here. But be careful driving this morning. Visibility less than a quarter of a mile into places near Madison, Baraboo, and also by the lake shore as well. But yes, this low pressure system is right now into Wyoming. It's going to be moving into the Dakotas and off into Minnesota. As it does so, it's first bringing a warm front. So that's why we're going to be breaking record highs today and also potentially tomorrow. We're hanging on to that warmth as well. But of course, it's going to be dreary. Rain pushing in by late tonight. We could see some light scattered sprinkles into the north woods first. Then the main event pushes in by tomorrow morning, and it'll spread throughout the state throughout the day. It's not going to be a heavy rainfall, but overall throughout the day, about a quarter of an inch max of rain. And we could see it flip to some flurries as it exits on Friday morning.
Are we looking at any break in all of this, in terms of the temperatures? Are we heading back to the deep freeze anytime in the near future that we can tell?
Not too crazy of a deep freeze, like no cold snap, wind chill advisory kind of freeze. But we are going to go back to some colder temperatures by the weekend and into next week, where highs will be into the mid-30s to low 30s. So slowly cooling, but still above average.
Okay, very good. Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot, thank you so much. We'll talk
to you
later.
Thank you.
All right, you as well. All right, coming up in the daily newsletter that we put out at upnorthnewswi.com, head on over there because Christina Laurie puts together all kinds of great stories for us, including a new website, a link to a website where, Greg, you can put in your zip code and you can find out if there are Girl Scout cookie booths that are going to be selling cookies in your area.
Pat, I don't need that. Okay. What are you doing?
Just saying, if you needed a little treat.
Did you know they're available year round?
Yes. And that's like I put in 54729, the Chippewa Falls zip code, and said, no booths in your area scheduled right now, but click here. And you can get cookies pretty much year round. Then I put in 54701, and there's all kinds of booths being set. Festival Foods, Fleet Farm, Hy-Vee, Dunkin' Donuts is going to have a cookie booth, and for all these many days. So again, a link in our newsletter for that.
And then another one like later in the year. Hey, you want some cookies? back alley down in 34th and Main. Thought so the guy named Tony.
We'll have links to Weight Watchers and gyms where you can go to work off all of those cookies. So for
this whole segment more, feels like it hates me. I'm so.
Also in the newsletter, we've got my article on the farm bill. It's big. It's bold. It's way behind schedule. We talked about that a little bit yesterday with Congressman Mark Pocan, and we talk about why that matters. And one more story in today's newsletter, Black Americans make up only 3% of all physicists, only 2% of all astronomers. And that's why Miona Short's 2018 graduation from the UW as the first Black woman to earn a degree in astrophysics was quite noteworthy. Now she's made history once again, launching her own company and a product that untangles an everyday problem for Black women and men. So for that and much more, sign up for our newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com, click newsletter in the top banner, and get yourself subscribed to that. All right. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to have our Women Win Wisconsin segment. And, of course, it will have Kristen Lierley, who has said before she's toying with the idea of running against Congressman Mike Gallagher. But so have two other women, Alicia Saunders and Kelly Peterson. All three of them held a public event last week in Green Bay to talk about not only the 8th Congressional District and the need for a good candidate there, but also other races and other ways that women and men and others can make a difference by stepping up and running for office or supporting those who do. So tomorrow, all three of them, Kristen, Alicia, and Kelly, will be here to talk about that. There's also a political action committee looking to back somebody running in the 8th District. And Julie Hancock from that political action committee had an op-ed in yesterday's Journal Sentinel, I believe, that targeted Congressman Gallagher, saying that he needs to break his silence on whether he does or does not support a national abortion ban. And frankly, I think that a lot of this quite vocal pressure on Gallagher to stop his drift to the far right probably played a role yesterday in him being one of the few Republicans to vote against impeaching President Biden's Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas. It was a bit of a surprise, although, again, in any kind of a close caucus like this, somebody's going to get the free pass, and it was Gallagher who got it this time. And I think that a lot of the work being done by people across the 8th Congressional District help illustrate why that might be the case. Oh, I'm sorry, Rob. I forgot to mention that when Brittany was here, Rob checked in from Tigerton. Some light fog, 29 degrees. And write this one down, too, Greg. He had shrimp tacos yesterday at Rachel's Roadside in Wittenberg. And that Rachel says hi to all of us.
Hi, so, Rachel.
See, now I've stopped frequently in Wittenberg. Now I know I got to stop at Rachel's Roadside.
Where is that in context to where you live?
If I knew, I would have stopped there. I stop at the McDonald's because it's right there. It's right there on 29. So clearly, I've now got to go find Rachel's.
There you go.
And go check that out. So see, and y'all can do this too. You just head over to Facebook, put a comment on there, give us a call, send us an email. We appreciate all of it because we want to support the people that are listening to the show.
During the interview with, during the climate check interview, a gentleman called and he said, "Unions rock."
Exactly.
There you go.
And again, that kind of a coincidental theme that was set up for today. We'd already planned to talk about teaching labor history, and then Melissa Baldoff for our climate check report decided to put the segment on the union jobs that are going to grow with green energy jobs that are happening throughout the country and especially across rural Wisconsin. So if you missed that last hour, head over to civicmedia.us and not only can you see all the stations and all the talk shows, but you can go back and listen to an hour that you might have missed of any of our regular programs. And then you can also sign up as a podcast. And you should really do that too, because you know you can catch the shows that you miss and the shows that you can't listen to live. All right, Republican legislators are again showing off a level of hypocrisy that normally would be considered stunning, but does not appear to be in this day and age. And it has to do with gubernatorial appointees who overstay their terms. A precedent, you'll recall, that was set by a gentleman named Fred Prehn, who conspired with Republican legislators and Scott Walker to stay on the Natural Resources Board well past the expiration of his term so that Governor Evers' nominee could not sit on the Natural Resources Board. Well, that came back to bite them with the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, Megan Wolf. Her term has expired. Republicans have been using her as a boogeyman for their lies about the 2020 presidential election. They've tried to have her removed, but again, even though her term has expired, Republicans set a precedent, and she remains in that post legally, as a court has found. So Republicans have now introduced a bill that would withhold the salary of state officials who continue working beyond the expiration of their term. So again, it would mean Megan Wolf would go without a paycheck, something that, again, was not one of their ideas back when they were conspiring to block Governor Evers' nominees and appointees before, but now they want to do to Megan Wolf or any others in the future who might continue to serve past the expiration of their term. It's a stunning little bit of hypocrisy and normally would not even be worth mentioning for this reason. It's got to be a bill. The bill is going to be vetoed by Governor Evers. And thankfully, while the Senate is comprised of a two-thirds Republican supermajority, the Assembly is just short of it. Again, reaffirming the need for new and fair maps in Wisconsin. So this bill, if it were to pass, would be vetoed by the governor. But we mentioned it anyway, just to again take note of a group of lawmakers who have become so good at saying one thing and doing another that it comes to them as easy as breathing. And it's unfortunate. And with any luck, we'll have a different tone in the legislature when the districts are written more fairly, when races have to be more competitive, and when candidates of both parties have to sound more like you and me, in that we have to work together sometimes, we have to compromise sometimes, and we have to do work, not just play political games. We'll continue with more in just a bit, but first to remind you, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north. We're live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Again, follow what we do over at UpNorthNewsWI.com. It was John Deere who was born on this day in 1804, who inspired the song there by the late Joe Diffie back in the 1990s. Hey, our friend Mark Jacob, who visits with us on Friday mornings, he has a weekly newsletter called Stop the Presses. It's all about how right-wing extremism has exploited the weaknesses in American journalism and what we can do about it. There's also a newsletter from Melissa Ryan called Control, Alt-Right, Delete. It is devoted to covering the rise of far-right extremism, white nationalism, disinformation, and online toxicity. And there's also a new newscast from Courier Newsroom called Vibes Only, where host Brian Derrick and Glennis Mahar call out the BS that is skewing how Americans feel about the economy and democracy itself. And we're looking to talk to Brian and Glennis coming up sometime next week. So for those newsletters, those podcasts, and more, head over to couriernewsroom.com. That's the parent company of Up North News. And you can subscribe to those newsletters and more. Our friend Kia Vakil also has a newsletter and visits with us on Friday mornings. So head to that website, couriernewsroom.com, to learn much more. In terms of civic media, a reminder that you can check out one of the newest shows there, Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Plenty of entertainment and comedy and pop culture news. And that's every weeknight from 8 until 10, live on the Civic Media Radio Network. And at the bottom of the hour, you'll be hearing again from Pam Yonke, who brings us the Midwest Farm Report. And you can hear the full Midwest Farm Report every weekday morning at 5 a.m. It's not just about market numbers. It's about our food and more. And you can catch that on Lake Air in Amory, Buzz of the North in Hayward, Oshkosh Air Support, and News from the Center. And if you are not around the terrestrial range of those radio stations, then by all means, head over to civicmedia.us, get the Civic Media app, and learn much more. I could not help but notice that Rona Romney McDaniel somehow is still chair of the Republican National Committee, and news reports now say that she plans to step down. I don't know how she's made it this long. The woman literally had to drop Romney from her name, her maiden name, which she was going by regularly, because Donald Trump doesn't like Mitt Romney, who I believe is her uncle. And because she does not back his false claims, his big lie about 2020 election fraud, now that it appears Trump is likely to become the GOP nominee, she's not going to be allowed, essentially, to run the party anymore. Michael Whatley, the head of the North Carolina Republican Party, is set to replace her. Now, under the arcane rules of the committee, according to the New York Times, Trump cannot simply install someone. A new election must take place. And that just appears to be the way that the tea leaves are going. Whatley has claimed without any basis in fact whatsoever that election security efforts from Republicans in North Carolina are what stopped Democrats from cheating. So to prove that he's lying, you somehow have to prove a negative. He's currently the general counsel at the Republican National Committee, and he has endorsed efforts to develop new voting laws, which would make it more difficult to vote. So if that is the case, I feel like we're going to need to check in with another one of our Courier Newsroom colleagues. Actually, we talked to folks over at the Cardinal and Pine, was it just last week, about Medicaid expansion in North Carolina, that even in North Carolina, Republicans have embraced expanding Medicaid, covering more people, especially in rural parts of the state. Wisconsin's one of only 10 states left where Republicans are still throwing a temper tantrum about the Affordable Care Act and refusing to give more people affordable, secure health care coverage through Badger Care. Even in North Carolina, which has this guy, an election denier, who's probably going to become the new chair of the Republican National Committee. Even there, they understand the wisdom of expanding and strengthening Medicaid. So I think we're going to have to look up our friends over at Cardinal and Pine and find out a bit more about this guy and get another update on how things go there, where, again, you have a state that is has a very Republican legislature and a Democratic governor, and how things can get done. If you missed it earlier, overnight or late yesterday, Republicans in the House of Representatives failed in their effort to impeach Alejandro Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security. And it failed by only one vote. And with only a couple of Republicans voting no, one of them being Wisconsin's Mike Gallagher, you can quite easily say that Gallagher was the tie-breaking vote that led Republicans to fail in their months-long promise to impeach the Secretary of Homeland Security. Gallagher put out a statement that tried to blame President Biden, tried to blame Nancy Pelosi, tried to blame Democrats who impeached Donald Trump for his own very real high crimes and misdemeanors. Fact of the matter is that Gallagher, you know, is hearing footsteps and is understanding that he needs to tack back toward the center if he's going to hold on to that 8th congressional district seat. A seat, by the way, that we don't know yet if the current lines are going to stay where they are. The case right now before the state Supreme Court deals with the lines for the legislature, for the assembly and the Senate. But a case has been filed with the state Supreme Court to change the congressional boundaries as well. I would say it's probably not likely to come up, but the odds aren't zero yet. And so it is still possible, slim as it might be, that congressional boundaries could change. And Congressman Gallagher is suddenly seeing the need to tack toward the center, basically taking the exact opposite approach of Derek Van Orden, who, if you look at the rantings and ravings on social media from him, has abandoned any notion whatsoever of trying to look moderate and has instead reduced himself, or returned, I guess would be a better word, to the name calling and the cussing and everything that essentially paints him as far right as most of us have known that he always is. And that's going to be his tact, is to latch himself onto Donald Trump. There is obviously a very significant contingent of Republican and Trump voters in the 3rd Congressional District, but it's not a guaranteed win. He won by a much smaller margin to Brad Paff than many, many folks were expecting. And there are several, good candidates in the Democratic primary that would love the challenge to go up against Derek Van Orden, since he has taken, made that decision to tack even further to the right in his effort to win re-election. In sports, wanted to let you know that the Milwaukee Bucks, now under their new coach, Doc Rivers, have fallen to 1-4 after losing in Phoenix last night, 114-106. The Bucks were without their star guard, Damian Lillard, who missed the game with a sprained ankle. Brooke Lopez was out for personal reasons, and Chris Middleton left in the first quarter with a sprained ankle. Giannis led Milwaukee with 34 points, and he said he believes the team is making progress, particularly on the defensive end. They will host the Minnesota Timberwolves tomorrow. And the 11th-ranked Badger men's basketball team is at Michigan tonight. You can catch that across the Civic Media Network on locally grown radio, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, news from the center in Richland Center, Lake Air in Amory, WRJN in Racine. Coming up next, Harvey Kay and John Shelton going to talk about the importance of teaching Wisconsin students about the labor movement and unions in Wisconsin. That's next. You're up north.
Through the mansions of fear, through the mansions.
The Wisconsin Labor History Society has an essay contest going on right now. The deadline for submissions is February 15th, and it's open for all high school students to participate in an essay contest. So to tell us more about that and more about Wisconsin labor history and the importance of high schoolers and others appreciating it in general, I am pleased to welcome in John Shelton and Harvey Kay. John is a professor of democracy and justice studies. Did I get that right, John?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
At UW Green Bay. And Harvey, I appreciate that. John says you're the guy that's really going to tell us much more about the Labor History Council and the essay contest as well.
Okay. And just for the record, I John and I are both on the board of the Wisconsin Labor History Society. I had the privilege of being one of the founders back in 1980, I guess it is, so people can imagine how old I am now. And I am Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, which means I'm a retired professor from the department. It's important to make clear that the reason labor history matters, before we even get to what we do in terms of the society, the reason it matters is that the story of American democracy really is the story of the struggles of working people in all their diversity to lay claim to the promise made in the Declaration of Independence: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And if we look back, the Revolution and American history ever after has been made all the more progressive by labor movements, by the labor movement in its various forms, the movement of artisans back in the 18th century, the movement of craftsmen, artisans, and factory workers in the 19th century, which included decidedly in labor history terms, women and people of color. We should not see this as a white movement at all, not even here in Wisconsin. And then here in the 20th century, it really is the case that the advances made, which have been under siege now for 50 years, the advances made in terms of Social Security, the rights of workers, The capacity to collectively bargain with one's employers, the what one has secured through collective bargaining, okay, vacation time, better wages, all of these things are possible not from the top down, but because workers have organized and made demands on politics and the economy that they should have a voice in the workplace and that they should be able to secure through that voice in the workplace certain kinds of benefits and rights. So that's important to understand. Labor movement, democracy, the fundamental connection.
And it was through a happy coincidence, John, that today's program actually started with a guest talking from the Regional Council of Carpenters about the future of union labor to make sure that the next generation of green energy jobs are jobs that have adequate pay, safe conditions, opportunities for apprenticeship and advancement. So for anybody that would look at this segment and say, oh, they're teaching labor history, that's old and antiquated, it's never going to be what it used to be, it sounds like that argument would be misplaced.
Yeah, 100%. And, let me just say this from the outset. Appreciate you inviting me here today, Pat. And I just want to say something about Harvey, because Harvey really was one of the founders of the Wisconsin Labor History Society. We were joking ahead of time that I was going to let Harvey carry this and I was going to be his hype man. But, y'all need to know what a giant Harvey has been in terms of like telling the story of labor in this state. Okay. Like everybody needs to know that from the outset. I think Harvey nailed it. We have a situation in this country where income and wealth inequality continues to become bigger each day. And for ordinary working people, again, in all their diversity, as Harvey said, you have people struggling to make ends meet, right? You have a version of capitalism in which corporations and the millionaire and billionaire class have so much power and it's taking away from the ability for people to earn good livelihoods. Well, we don't have to just like fight for the kinds of future we all deserve without any sort of context, without understanding the kinds of things people have done in the past. Because if we look to those things that people have done in the past, that can help us understand where we are now, and it can nourish us. It can give us the kind of Harvey and I talk about this all the time. It's something he came up with, not me. But the historical solidarity to understand that we are part of a struggle that's bigger than us, and we can look to the tactics that people have employed in the past because they're all deeply relevant. And one of the great things about the Wisconsin Labor History Society, from my view, I've been on the board, I think, for about 10 years now. I think I've been elected to 5 terms at this point as a board member, and the organization continues to evolve. So I think a lot of people think about something like labor history is just like studying a bunch of old white dudes and a very particular subset of unions. That's not the story of labor. That's part of it for sure, but it's much more bigger. It's much more diverse than that. It's much bigger than that. And we have annual conferences every year, and they've covered everything from they've covered the kind of more traditional stuff, like here's the history of the Kohler strike in the 1950s, to immigration and women's rights and how labor connects with politics. That's what our organization's all about. And so we're telling the story of labor and workers here in Wisconsin from a very broad lens. And how can you understand the story of America, the story of Wisconsin, without understanding the story of the people who do all of the work that makes everything happen? I would argue that our organization is more essential than just about any other historical society that's out there. So I'm super proud of it, and super proud that we have this essay contest that high schoolers can write an essay for each year.
Well, you head over to wisconsinlaborhistory.org, again, wisconsinlaborhistory.org, and you see, for example, up at the top, key events in Wisconsin labor history, and they range from the Bayview tragedy of 1886, the Kohler strike in 1954, all the way through the Wisconsin uprising in 2011 that led to Act 10. But Harvey, again, the story of, unions and worker respect on the job isn't just something that's shaped by conflict and sacrifice, but also needs to be a story of, the ongoing benefits that result. And that's why I like the idea that this essay contest begins with this theme. Unions have been important to my family and my community and my nation because. So it's not just the conflict and the sacrifice, but the ongoing benefits.
Yeah, and I can tell you that that question should be a means by which teenagers can talk to their parents, their grandparents, their neighbors, and others if they're not sure, where they not only have to do what we think of as book research or online research, but they can actually talk to family members and ask them, why have you been in a union? What have you sought? What benefits have you gained? What kind of solidarities in the community have been encouraged? Unions are usually very active community organizations. What kinds of ways have we participated? I can tell you that when John and I've been doing the essay contest for about 40 years, I think, I hate to say that, but when John and I really picked up on this, one of the things that struck us was that there were young people who had gone with their parents to Madison during the protests against the Walker governorship, Act 10, and the Republicans' imposition, you know, and make basically beginning to turn us into a right-to-work state. And what these kids remember is the experience of being with all of these adults and other young people demanding their rights. Now, those rights have yet to be restored, okay? And it's important that we remember this. This is an important piece of Wisconsin labor history. Wisconsin was the first state in the nation in 1959 to grant public employees union and collective bargaining rights. And then we became the first state to see it stripped. Now that's part of the history. And those are the kinds of things we need to remember. But I also want to point out that when I came to Wisconsin in 1978 to teach here at UW-Green Bay, and we began the organization, in the early days, we had a conference to remember the COLA strike of 1934 and the COLA strike of 1954. And what was interesting about that is that that we had the lawyer from those strikes. He was still alive. This is back in the early 80s. We had union members who had been unwilling to join the union in 34, and then in the course of the next 20 years, realized the importance of the union and then went out on strike as leaders in 1954. There's this generational connection, and labor history the writing of these essays should encourage that kind of intergenerational activity. That's why we say unions are good for my family, my community, and my nation because, and leave it up to the student, the high school student, to speak to family members and neighbors and learn from them, as well as, again, the books, the libraries, and so on, what it means to have a labor union and be able to have a voice in the workplace.
John, are there resources for educators across the state who, you know, want to incorporate more of these lessons into, you know, their own classroom material?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me say something real quick about the essay contest before I jump back into that, though. So Harvey has been sort of leading the effort to judge the essays every year, and he's kind of brought me into it. So when he's talking about this, it's because, you know, we've been reading these essays and judging them, you know, for about a decade now, and it has been fascinating to see, you know, young people engaging with these questions. So the one thing that's interesting about the Wisconsin labor history, well, there's many things, but one thing that is interesting is that, like, it's not just a bunch of professors. In fact, you know, probably only like a third of our board are people who are at university settings, right? So we have a lot of labor activists, a lot of union leaders on our board too. So it's one of those organizations that really brings people together from lots of different backgrounds. It's quite good that way, and our conferences are just like that as well. Folks listening to this, if you've been around for a while, you might know that I think it was 2009. Our senator up here in Green Bay at the time, Dave Hansen, played a big role in this. And the legislature passed a law requiring labor history in high school, a unit of labor history. So one of the things Wisconsin Labor History Society has been doing over the years is compiling a lot of resources, readings and lesson materials that high school teachers in particular can use. We have a whole initiative called Labor in Schools. So if folks want to learn more about that, just go to our website, Wisconsin Labor History Society website and .org, thank you, I see that on the screen now. Go to the website and you'll find all kinds of materials that you can use as a high school teacher, or if you're just, you know, want to learn more about labor history yourself. There's quite a lot of resources there that have been compiled by our team over the years.
Yep, right there again. The website is wisconsinlaborhistory.org. I was proud to be a member of the state Senate, serving alongside Dave Hansen when that vote took place, and again to help underscore the importance of it. Because again, and we'll conclude with the minute we have left here, Harvey, that all of this about the past is about what we want the jobs of the future to be like, and the jobs of the future, the condition of them, really are going to be in the hands of workers who do or do not learn and appreciate from the past, right?
Absolutely. And I'll just say one last thing is that people tend to think of labor history, they tend to think of urban areas. So they might think about Green Bay or Madison or Milwaukee. In the labor history essay contest, we find that there are unions across the state. There are working people throughout the state. There are kids who are in schools who talk to their parents. We get essays from the far north in Superior, from Merrill, from down in Racine. If you have a son or daughter who's interested in possibly winning $500, $300, $200, whatever it might be, and if you'll find out online, talk to them about labor history. Talk to them about why labor matters to you. And this weekend, encourage them to write an essay. It does not have to be in our possession by February 15th. It has to be postmarked. Well, no, indeed. Sorry, I take it back. I'm thinking still of the days we used to mail them in. if you send them in next week, I'm sure if it comes a little bit late, we'll entertain them. Don't worry, okay?
Yeah, just send it to info@wisconsinlaborhistory.org. Again, go to wisconsinlaborhistory.org, and you will learn all the details about the essay and so much more that you'll find in there. Very all-encompassing website, a great educational resource set up by Harvey Kay, by John Shelton, by many other folks. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We learned a lot. Learned to appreciate a lot, and I hope to visit with you again real soon.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk to Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show about what's coming up later on the Civic Media Radio Network.
When you wish upon a star, make no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you.
There's our own little Jiminy Cricket. Todd Alba joins us now on this anniversary of the release of Pinocchio.
Is it really?
He's like, yes, it is. This day in 1940. Todd's like this little voice of, he's like our conscience, you know, who just stands there on our shoulder and tells us, you know, what the right thing is to do, and then most of the time we end up going in the other weird direction. But Todd is there as our moral compass.
And in the original version of that story, that character gets crushed to death.
Oh, great. Thanks, Killjoy.
Well, you know, I'm just bringing truth to history, baby.
I like the Disneyfication of it better. So, Mr. Alba, how are you?
I'm just chirping away, Patrick.
Yes, you are. holding down the early afternoon fort there. And once again, quite the road warrior, you were making the rounds again this week already.
I was up in Green Bay, beautiful Green Bay, WGBW up there. And let me tell you, it's a beautiful town. But in the second hour today, I'm going to tell you a story about two parking tickets and how many offices I had to go to. It turns out now up there at Green Bay, if you don't pay your parking ticket within 2 months, not only do they suspend your license, but then they turn it over to the state debt collection agency over a $22 parking ticket. So $110 later and three offices and two phone calls, I'm finally good.
Wow.
Did you have my money.
So what Todd's not telling you is he learned that the phrase "Do you know who I am?" only gets you so far in civic media.
I used that and they said, "Who?"
Who?
It's a lovely town, but yeah, they are very, very aggressive up there. Because, you know, of course, you have Mino and the mayor up there. And, you know, and
I was going to say, they have a show up there with a mayor.
Well,
where's our poll? Where's our poll?
The mayor is now the former mayor, and apparently the new guy, the new council, they're much more aggressive. So be careful if you go up there and park. Do not let your meter run out.
I don't know. So, that's like, what good does it do us to have that kind of a local tie-in on a show? I just hope you take it up with the proper authorities there, Edmino and the mayor.
The great news is that there's a condo and office building across the street from our studios in Green Bay. And yesterday there was a realtor showing people around, and I'm a bit of a voyeur. And so I enjoyed watching people in the building to see what they were doing. It's like live entertainment, you understand? And of course I have no life, so I mean that was very interesting for me.
What'd you do yesterday? I watched other people walk around a room.
And that ends today's segment of Awkward Confessions with Todd Alba. You know, in the last segment there where we had Harvey K. and John Shelton talking about labor history, we didn't have time to get into this, but I wanted to make the point as well, especially in the wake of Act 10, the elections from 2010 onward. No, actually, the elections from Ronald Reagan onward. And that's about the number of people who took for granted what they had, whether it was their rights as workers, public sector or otherwise, and now our rights as Americans, our voting rights and democracy itself. And it seems if we've learned nothing from what was first the anti-union movement and now the anti-democracy movement, it's that if you just take in the right-wing talking points and you start taking your freedoms for granted, don't be surprised when you start losing these things. And I'm frankly quite glad that you know, Sage Weil helped create Civic Media, and we created Up North News to finally have a counter to the points that led to people taking what we have for granted.
I spent, in addition to Green Bay, I was in Shawnee for a couple of days as well, just west of Green Bay, and talking to a couple of retired teachers and juxtaposing that to educators in Wisconsin, public educators that I also know. And to your point, Pat, I think that the impacts of Act 10 under Scott Walker are still not being fully understood. They're finally being realized, by the way, but not fully understood. And this is why educators now have worse health care by and large. They're paying more for worse health care. I know an educator in Eau Claire School District who now has to drive to Marshfield for basic care because their insurance doesn't cover had going to a physician in the city of Eau Claire proper. The effect on that, and we hear, oh, geez, you know, we have a shortage of educators. Well, I wonder why. Why are people not wanting to go get degrees in public education from our fine University of Wisconsin system? It's because of the attack on working people. And you're seeing this replicated time and time again. You have Donald Trump paying people to pretend they're union workers in a place that's not a union shop. Rachel Maddow literally had the receipts on MSNBC the other night. I think it was $20,000 they paid to rent out this vacant space and make it into a quote-unquote union hall, which it wasn't. So even the Trump people know that this is wrong because they need union people to win, but the attacks continue.
What did you make of Congressman Mike Gallagher being one of the deciding votes impeaching Alejandro Mayorkas as Homeland Security Secretary yesterday? I think, frankly, he's hearing footsteps.
Yeah, I think so. And look, I'm not in his head. I'll say this. I'm willing to, until we know otherwise, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think it's important that when Republicans do the right thing, that we recognize that. And look, I'm glad that Gallagher was one of like three Republicans in the House to say, look, this does not make any sense. Whatever reason he did it for, I don't know. But at least he made the right vote, unlike do-nothing Derek Van Orten in the 3rd District. And I think the thing that voters in Wisconsin should ask themselves, particularly Republican voters, is which one is right? Because they both can't be. Is Derek Van Orten right in voting for impeaching Mayorkas, for supporting Trump releasing January 6th insurrectionists who were found guilty? Or, you know, did Gallagher do the right thing? I think you're right. I think that politically he is hearing footsteps. But, you know, I'll give credit where credit is due. He, on one day, on one vote, he made the right one.
Yeah, but what a day. What an embarrassment for the party that could not do that. They could not pass a standalone aid bill for Israel. The only thing they managed to pass was a resolution that said Donald Trump did not commit insurrection on January 6th. Mark Pocan said it quite bluntly yesterday that it's a cult of personality. And yesterday's events – just can't help but bear that out. So, I mean, it was just quite an unfortunate day. But back to Congressman Gallagher, we will be talking tomorrow to Kristen Lierley, Alicia Saunders, and Kelly Peterson, three women who are all contemplating running against him later this year. And you can keep up on that topic and much more with Mr. Alba starting this afternoon at noon. Thank you for the visit, sir. Glad you traveled safe, and we'll talk to you this afternoon.
See you at noon, Patrick.
All right. Thank you so much, Greg. You have a great day there as well. And again, tomorrow, our Women Win Wisconsin segment. Also, we will be talking to Joe Zepecki and get that updated forecast heading into Super Bowl weekend. Thanks so much for joining us here up north. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow.